Welcome to the Histrionics Podcast, where I review a few pieces of history that aren't very well known or deserve a little more attention. Today I'm going to discuss a UFO in Iran, the Unabomber Manifesto, and a mysterious burst of light in the Indian Ocean. Two of the events took place on September 19th, and the third event took place on September 22nd. September 19th, 1976. Two Iranian Air Force jets fly out to investigate a UFO over Tehran. Both jets lose instrumentation and communications as they approach, which are restored after they abandon their pursuit. A shiny object was reported in the sky above Tehran by at least four civilians. Lieutenant Yadi Naziri and a backseat weapons officer were dispatched in an F-4 Phantom II jet interceptor to investigate. Once Naziri neared the object, he reported losing all instruments and communications, so he returned to base, reporting that his instruments came back once he did so. Major Parviz Jafari, a squadron commander in the Imperial Iranian Air Force, along with another weapons officer, took off in a second F-4 Phantom II jet to intercept the object. Jafari acquired radar lock on an object at a range of 27 nautical miles. Its size was similar to a Boeing KC-135, which is over 130 feet long. As Jafari approached the light, which he describes as flashing with intense red, green, orange, and blue lights, the communication system shut off. As he attempted to fire an infrared-guided missile, he said his equipment shut down. It only returned to normal after his jet moved away from the object. Jafari said he was startled by a round object which came out of the primary object and started coming straight toward him at a high rate of speed, as if it were a missile. But as he attempted to fire, nothing was working. The weapons control panel was out, and he lost all instruments and the radio. When he could report to the tower control, he was told to get back. On his way back, he looked to his left and saw the primary craft and another bright object coming out of the primary craft and headed directly towards the ground. Expecting an explosion that did not happen, he claimed it seemed to slow down and land gently on the ground, radiating a bright light. The next day, Jafari and his backseat officer flew in a helicopter to look at where they thought the light hit the ground, but nothing was found, with occupants of nearby houses only reporting hearing a loud noise and a bright flash of light during the night. According to U.S. journalist Philip J. Klass, it was likely the pilots initially saw an astronomical body, probably Jupiter. This explanation is also cited by aerospace researcher James Oberg. Klass wrote that pilot incompetence and equipment malfunction likely accounted for the reported equipment failures. According to Klass, the Westinghouse technician at Cherokee Air Base stated that only the first F-4 reported failing equipment, and that this specific F-4 was known for equipment failures and had a long history of electrical outages, having been repaired only a month before the incident. Klass cites an F-4 Phantom II repair supervisor that the jet's radar could have been in manual track mode, causing the wrong interpretation of the radar lock. Klass also points out that the air crews at the time were tired and rattled and could have mistaken stars or meteors for UFOs and missiles. In addition, he points out that radio faults on airliners are not unknown, and that is why they carry backup radios. Regarding one pilot's report of bright objects that came at him and that shot straight down to the ground, American skeptic author Brian Dunning observed that day of the incident was the height of two annual meteorite showers, so observation of falling objects or odd lights would not have been unusual. At the site where the falling light supposedly crashed, a beeping transponder from a C-141 aircraft was also found. Dunning said, "Once we look at all the story's elements, without the presumption of an alien spaceship, the only thing unusual about the Terran 1976 UFO case is that planes were chasing celestial objects and had equipment failures. There have been many cases where planes had equipment failures, and there have been many cases where planes misidentified celestial objects. Once in a while, both will happen at the same time." Here's my take on the Terran UFO incident. I don't know. I doubt it was an alien spacecraft, but it's getting harder to explain these sightings, especially the ones from the military. And I've lost faith in explanations from scientists and experts, and obviously don't trust many opinions from the government. So I don't know. September 19th, 1995. The Washington Post and the New York Times published the Unabomber Manifesto. Industrial Society and Its Future, widely known as the Unabomber Manifesto, is a 35,000-word essay by Ted Kaczynski contending that the Industrial Revolution began a harmful process of technology destroying nature while forcing humans to adapt to machines and creating a socio-political order that suppresses human freedom and potential. The manifesto formed the ideological foundation of Kaczynski's mail bomb campaign from 1978 to 1995. The manifesto argues against accepting technological advancements as purely positive without accounting for their overall effect. While Americans were disgusted by Kaczynski's violence, his manifesto expressed ideas that continue to be commonly shared among the American public. It was initially regarded as a thoughtful critique of modern society, but Kaczynski's 1996 trial polarized public opinion around the essay. His court-appointed lawyers tried to justify their insanity defense around the manifesto being the work of a madman, and the prosecution lawyers rested their case on it being produced by a sound mind. At 35,000 words, the manifesto places very detailed blame on technology for destroying society. Kaczynski contends that the Industrial Revolution harmed the human race by developing into a socio-political order that subjugates human needs beneath its own. "This system," he wrote, "destroys nature and suppresses individual freedom. In short, humans adapt to machines rather than vice versa, resulting in a society hostile to human potential." Kaczynski blames technology for the rise in unlivable cities, controlled by an unaccountable state. He contends that this relentless pursuit of progress will not dissipate on its own because individual technological advancements are seen as good, despite the negative effects of this progress. Kaczynski describes modern society as defending this order against dissent, in which individuals are adjusted to fit the system, and those outside of the system are seen as bad. "This tendency," he says, "gives rise to expansive police powers, mind-numbing mass media, and indiscriminate promotion of drugs." He criticizes both big government and big business as the inescapable result of industrialization, and holds scientists and technophiles responsible for recklessly pursuing power through technological advancements. He argues that this industrialized system's collapse will be devastating, and that quickening the collapse will mitigate the overall impact. He justifies the trade-offs that come with losing industrial society as being worth the cost. Kaczynski's ideal revolution seeks to overthrow the economic and technological foundation of modern society. Kaczynski believed in violence as direct action when words were insufficient, and to draw others to pay attention to his critique. He wanted his ideas to be taken seriously. Between 1978 and 1995, Ted Kaczynski engaged in a mail bomb campaign against people involved with modern technology. His targets were universities and airlines. In June of 1995, Kaczynski offered to end his bombing campaign if one of several publications, the Washington Post, the New York Times, or Penthouse, would publish his critique of technology, titled "Industrial Society and Its Future." The media debated on the ethics of publishing the manifesto under threats of more violence. The United States Attorney General, Janet Reno, advocated for the essay to be shared so that a reader could recognize the author. The manifesto was originally printed in 1995 in supplements by the Washington Post and New York Times. The publicity around the manifesto became a bigger story than the bombings, and led to Kaczynski being identified by his brother, David Kaczynski. David made the realization that the phrase, "You can't eat your cake and have it too," in the Unabomber Manifesto might be an indication of the writer's true identity. It was a term Ted used frequently, and often pointed out that people misuse all the time. Here's my take on the manifesto. He's not wrong. Ted Kaczynski is a piece of shit that deserves to die, but when it comes to the effects of technology, he's not wrong. September 22, 1979. A bright flash, resembling the detonation of a nuclear weapon, is observed near the Prince Edward Islands. The cause is never determined. The Vela incident, also known as the South Atlantic Flash, was an unidentified double flash of light in the Indian Ocean. The double flash was detected by the American Vela satellites, which carried various sensors designed to detect nuclear explosions. In addition to being able to detect gamma rays, X-rays, and neutrons, the satellite also contained two sensors that could detect the dual light flashes associated with an atmospheric nuclear explosion. The initial brief, intense flash, followed by a second, longer flash. After the event was made public, the United States Department of Defense clarified that it was either a bomb blast or a combination of natural phenomenon, such as lightning, a meteor, or a glint from the sun. The initial assessment by the United States National Security Council, with the technical support by the Naval Research Laboratory in October of 1979, was that American intelligence community had high confidence that the event was a low-yield nuclear explosion, although no radioactive debris had been detected and there were no corroborating seismic or hydroacoustic data. A later NSC report revised this position to inconclusive about whether a nuclear test had occurred. If a nuclear explosion did occur, it occurred within the 3,000-mile-wide circle covering the parts of the Indian Ocean, the South Atlantic, the southern tip of Africa, and a small part of Antarctica. Since 1980, some small amounts of new information have emerged, but most questions remain unanswered. In February of 1994, Commodore Dieter Gerhardt, a convicted Soviet spy and the commander of South Africa's Simonstown naval base at the time, talked about the incident upon his release from prison. He said, "Although I was not directly involved in planning or carrying out the operation, I learned unofficially that the flash was produced by an Israeli-South African test, codenamed Operation Phoenix. The explosion was clean and was not supposed to be detected. But they were not as smart as they thought, and the weather changed, so the Americans were able to pick it up." Gerhardt further stated that no South African naval vessels had been involved, and that he had no first-hand knowledge of a nuclear test. In 1993, then-President F.W. de Klerk admitted that South Africa had indeed possessed six assembled nuclear weapons, with the seventh in production, but they had all been dismantled. There was no mention specifically of the Vela incident or the Israeli cooperation in South Africa's nuclear program. In April of 1997, the Israeli daily newspaper Haaretz quoted the South African Deputy Foreign Minister Aziz Pahad as supposedly confirming the double flash from over the Indian Ocean was indeed from a South African nuclear test. Pahad's statement was confirmed by the United States Embassy in Pretoria, South Africa, but Pahad's press secretary stated that Pahad had only said there was a strong rumor that a test had taken place and that it should be investigated. In 2003, Stansfield Turner, the director of Central Intelligence during the Carter administration, stated that the Vela detection was a man-made phenomenon. In a 2006 book retired CIA officer Tyler Drumheller wrote about his tour in South Africa. My sources collectively provided irrefutable evidence that the apartheid government had in fact tested a nuclear bomb in the South Atlantic in 1979, and that they had developed a delivery system with the assistance from the Israelis. In 2010, Jimmy Carter published his White House diary. In the entry for September 22, 1979, he wrote, "There was indication of a nuclear explosion in the region of South Africa. Either South Africa or Israel using a ship at sea, or nothing." For February 27, 1980, he wrote, "We have a growing belief among our scientists that the Israelis conducted a nuclear test explosion in the ocean near the southern end of Africa." Some American information related to this incident has been declassified in the form of heavily redacted reports following requests for records made under the U.S. Freedom of Information Act. A report from December of 2016 noted that the debate has shifted over the last few years on the side of a man-made weapon test. A CIA-sponsored panel of well-respected scientists concluded that a mysterious flash detected by a U.S. Vela satellite over the South Atlantic on the night of September 22, 1979, was likely a nuclear test. Here's my take on the Vela incident. Sounds like Israel and South Africa were testing nukes. Thought that story was going to be cooler? Me too. Sorry about that. And now on to some things that deserve less attention.
I don't give a shit.
No, you shouldn't. No one does. It's almost comical this week. September 19th, 1982. Scott Fallman posts the first documented emoticons. Smiley face and a frowny face on the Carnegie Mellon University bulletin board system. God damn you, Mr. Fallman. I'm sure you've contributed more to society than I ever could, but you also introduced the world to emojis. Just a few years ago, I said I'd never use an emoji, and now I use them every day. And they're so silly, and they get sillier and sillier with every little train I put together. September 20th, 1973. Billie Jean King beats Bobby Riggs in the Battle of the Sexes tennis match at the Houston Astrodome. Billie Jean King was 29, and Bobby Riggs was 55. And some people say that he threw the match because he had a gambling problem. He bet against himself. But what are we doing with all this? Can we stop this? The Battle of the Sexes. I remember a few years ago, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago or something, a guy that was ranked 200-something in tennis smoked both of the Williams sisters. That didn't need to happen. I also remember when a bunch of 14-year-olds beat the U.S. women's soccer team in a match. What are we trying to prove here? September 20th. 2019. Roughly 4 million people, mostly students, demonstrate across the world to address climate change. 16-year-old Greta Thunberg from Sweden leads the demonstration in New York City. How many people from China were protesting? Was Greta yapping at all the people in China for all the pollution they're causing? Telling them how to behave? How many people from India protested? By far the biggest polluter in the world. September 22nd, 1823. Joseph Smith claims to have found the golden plates after being directed by God through the angel Moroni to the place where they were buried. Yeah, sure you did, Joseph. And that's going to do it for today. For this week, and I'll see you next week. Gerhardt further stated that no South African naval vessels had been evolved,